Imagine standing in a Montana fairground on a summer night in 1915. The sun has gone down, and out here on the high plains, the dark comes all at once. No light except stars and the oil lantern strung around the infield. 10,000 people are packed into that fairground, and not one of them knows what they are about to see. They hear it first, an airplane engine, somewhere up in the dark above them, the snarl of a Curtis tractor climbing out over the infield, invisible against a black sky, circling, getting altitude. The crowd looks up and sees nothing, and then the sky catches fire. Roman candles blazing from the wingtips, cutting arcs of white and gold across the Montana night. And now the airplane is rolling, looping, coming inverted directly over your head with fire trailing behind it like a comet pulled through a turn. Loop after loop, the fire painting lines against the dark that the crowd will be trying to describe to people who weren't there for the rest of their lives. When the engine finally cuts and the silence comes back, nobody in that fairground moves, because nobody has any framework for what they just saw. The pilot climbing down from that cockpit was 23 years old. She weighed 101 pounds, and her name was Catherine Stinson. "I'm Tail Dragger. This is the hangar on Radio Hangar. Sit down for this one. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Catherine Stinson was not supposed to be a pilot. That needs to be said plainly. The life mapped out for her had nothing to do with engines or airfields or crowds staring up at the sky. She was born in 1891 in Fort Payne, Alabama, grew up in Kansas City, and came of age as a gifted pianist. The plan, her plan, was to earn enough money for conservatory school in Europe, serious music study, a quiet, structured career built around the instrument. To earn that money faster, she decided to learn to fly. The barnstorming circuit was paying real money by 1912. Exhibition flights, airshow appearances, county fairs, state celebrations. The daredevil pilots were drawing crowds the size of baseball games. Some of them were pulling in more in a single weekend than a school teacher earned in a year. Catherine Stinson was a practical person. She had a goal if she found a way to fund it. She took her first lesson and earned her pilot's license from the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale, what pilots of the era called the FAI, in 1912. She was 20 years old, the fourth woman in the United States to hold that credential. The man who trained her was Max Lilly, one of the sharper exhibition pilots working the circuit at the time, and he nearly turned her away when she first walked up to him. He later said that by her third lesson he understood he was working with the most naturally gifted student he had ever taken up. She established herself in San Antonio at what would eventually become the Stinson School of Flying, a family operation she ran with her mother and eventually her sister Marjorie, who earned her own license and became a flight instructor. The Stinsons were that kind of family. Once one of them found something worth doing, the rest came along. On the exhibition circuit, they called Catherine the flying schoolgirl. She was small. She looked younger than she was. She dressed neatly, spoke quietly before a flight, and had the kind of face that made a crowd wonder if she was really going to do what the announcer had just told them she was going to do. And then she got in the airplane, and the crowd stopped wondering. She had what the old-timers used to call hands, not just coordination, not just the mechanical sequence of working a set of controls. She had a feel for the machine that cannot be trained into a person. It either lives in you or it doesn't. She could sense a wing beginning to go before any instrument would register it. She could hold the airplane at the edge of its envelope with the same precision a musician holds a phrase right at the limit of tempo without letting it break. In 1915, she became the first woman to loop an airplane in the United States. She did it at an air show in Chicago, and the next morning the Chicago Tribune put it on the front page, not a small item, not a novelty paragraph buried in the back. The front page, Catherine Stinson read that and was already thinking about the next thing. She started asking herself what a loop looked like from the ground at night, what fire looked like at 60 miles an hour through the dark. She acquired a set of Roman candles, the large mortars you would see at a 4th of July celebration, and she worked out a mounting frame that would secure them to the wing struts of her Curtis tractor. Not impulsively, she thought through the slipstream and what it would do to the burn. She thought through the heat against fabric and wood construction. She tested the entire rig in daylight, without crowds, working through every failure mode she could anticipate. The candles fired clean in the slipstream. The heat was manageable. The airplane flew normally with the added weight. She designed the show. The Montana State Fair in Helena in August of 1915 was where she first took it public. She climbed to altitude after the sun went down. The crowd heard the engine somewhere above them. They had been told something was coming, but the fair organizers barely knew themselves what they were about to see. She lit the candles at altitude. Fire appeared in the sky. Not a flare shot straight up, not a firework on a fixed trajectory. A streak of fire moving horizontally with a Curtiss biplane driving it, and then the fire was rolling, arcing over, upside down, pulling through a loop and doing it again. Catherine Stinson flew loop after loop and spiral after spiral with Roman candles blazing off her wings while 10,000 people stood in a Montana fairground and had no language for it. After Helena, she pushed further. She calculated that with enough precision in the ground track, she could control the arc of each maneuver precisely enough to trace letterforms in the sky. She measured the burn time of the candles against her airspeed and the geometry of each letter she wanted to write. She flew the sequence over Los Angeles and traced the letters C, A, and L across the night sky above the city. California, a burning word stretched 2,000 feet wide, visible for miles in every direction. She was 23 years old. In 1917, she set a long-distance record. She flew from San Diego heading north, covering 910 miles in a sustained cross-country run that was, at the time, the longest distance flight ever completed in North America. By any pilot, male or female, that same year, she took the airplane overseas. She barnstormed Japan. This was 1917. Japan had seen airplanes. Japan had not seen anyone fly the way Catherine Stinson flew. She performed in Tokyo and Osaka to crowds that had lined up before dawn for a sideline. The Japanese press called her something close to an aerial artist, which is probably the most accurate description anyone put to paper. The government received her with a formality usually reserved for visiting foreign dignitaries. She went to China after Japan, and the response was the same. She was not just a curiosity, she was recognized in both countries as something genuinely exceptional. She came home to a nation that had entered the First World War. And this is the part that still sits wrong with me, 100 years after the fact. Catherine Stinson applied to the Army Air Service. She had more documented flight time and more demonstrated proficiency than most of the men being commissioned into aviation billets. She had flown on multiple continents in front of crowds numbering in the tens of thousands. She had set distance records and performed maneuvers that trained military pilots of the era could not have replicated. By any standard you could name, she was one of the finest aviators in the United States. They told her no. She applied again. They told her no again. The Army Air Service was not considering female pilots. The subject was not open for discussion. She went to France anyway. Not as a pilot, as a Red Cross ambulance driver. She worked the field hospital routes, driving wounded soldiers through terrain that aircraft were covering from the air, through the cold and the mud of the Western Front. She worked in conditions that would have broken most people, and she did it month after month because she was Catherine Stinson, and she was going to be useful one way or another. In 1918, in France, she contracted tuberculosis. The disease ended her flying career. She came home and fought the illness through a long, slow recovery. By 1920, she was well enough to think about the exhibition circuit again. But the world had changed completely while she was sick. The armistice had released thousands of trained military pilots onto the civilian market. The army surplus had put Curtiss Jennies up for sale at $300 apiece, sometimes less. The barnstorming circuit was saturated. Pilots who had spent the war years learning formation flying and gunnery were flooding every airfield in the country. The window that pilots like Catherine Stinson had spent a decade prying open was now so crowded that even she couldn't get back through it cleanly. She never flew professionally again. She became an architect. She moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, studied architectural design, and built a second career there. Homes, buildings, structures that still stand in the Southwest. She was good at it. She was the kind of person who was simply good at most things she put her mind to. She had that quality. She lived until 1977, 86 years old, in Santa Fe, a long way from any fairground or exhibition field or airshow grandstand. She is buried there. Most people who walk past that grave have no idea they are standing next to the woman who lit Roman candles off her wing struts and wrote the name of a state across the Los Angeles sky, who set a cross-country distance record that stood for years, who barnstormed Japan and China, who applied twice to fly in the war that needed pilots and was turned down both times because the army had made up its mind, and who then drove ambulances through a French battle zone until the disease got her. That is who Catherine Stinson was. And that is the barnstorming era I want you to carry out of this hangar today. Not the sepia romance of a biplane at a county fair. The actual human beings who built aviation with their hands and their nerve and their refusal to accept the limits other people had in mind for them. She was among the finest of them. Sources for today's segment include David Hatfield's research on early American aviation history, the FAI pilot certificate records, and contemporary reporting from the Chicago Tribune, the Los Angeles Times, and the Kansas City Star. The National Air and Space Museum's Katherine Stinson biographical file filled in several of the details on her Japan and China tours. Find us at radiohanger.com. I'm Taildragger. Safe skies out there.